All right, so it is Tuesday, May 31st, 2022. I am Jess Lamar Reese-Holler, and this is the Caledonia Public Square Memories and Futures Project. This is our interview number 9 out of 10, and we are talking with the illustrious former mayor of Caledonia, Mr. Randy Underwood, and I'm very excited to say I just recently learned, also a distant relative of mine, so this is an interview within the family in a way. So, Randy, just for the record, could I have you say and spell your full name? And oh, before we get into that, like I said, it's May 31st, 2022, and it's 2:13 in the afternoon. But yeah, Randy, give us your name, just so we've got it.
Okay, my name is Randy Underwood, RandyUnderwood.
Perfect. And to start us off, Randy, my million-dollar question, tell us a little bit about where and when you were born and the world you came up in.
I was born in Caledonia, or my parents were living in Caledonia. I was born in Marion, August 26, 1955. I'm a lifelong resident of Caledonia. Grew up here and spent a lot of good times here.
And tell me a little bit just about kind of your parents who came before you and your family. How and when, if you know, did your family get to Caledonia?
My family's been here pretty long time. The first Underwoods came in the 1830s, just before Caledonia was laid out and platted. There's a cemetery near the intersection of State Route 95 and 746 that is the Underwood Cemetery, and it's recently been restored by my cousin Larry Underwood and his wife Laura and their son John Underwood. So my father and those who came before him have all been lifelong residents of the village, and hopefully we've been good residents and good citizens. We've been involved in village government and with a lot of activities in the village, involved with the Church of Christ.
And I'd love for you to tell me, I want to get into all of that, and I know you are, like you said, a multi-generational municipal leader in Caledonia, but can you say a little bit just about your impressions and memories of Caledonia in that, you know, first decade of your life? You're born in 55. So what was Caledonia and what was the village, what was a public square in the downtown like, 55 to 65? Any memories from your childhood that stand out?
It was always the center of the village, center of commerce and center of activities. I remember two grocery stores and a drugstore, library, hardware, bank, four bars. A lot of that's moved out now, but it was always a bustling little downtown. At one time, I think it was maybe about the time I was born or maybe a little bit before, old State Route 30 South went through the village. It came in on what is now known as Marion Galleon Road and crossed the little bridge and into the square and then down Main Street to where it connects to where 309 is now. I think in the mid to late 50s is when they put a bypass in, and I don't think at that time it affected the village business district too much because it flourished for quite a few years. But like a lot of other small towns, eventually the downtown began to decay a little bit as far as business and interest goes. And hopefully that'll turn around, and someday we'll have the same downtown we had before.
So when you were growing up in the mid-50s, in the 60s, was the downtown bustling?
Yes. I don't remember when they had movies on the square on Saturday nights, but a lot of the older people remember that. The merchants would go together and stay late open on Saturdays, and they'd have a movie on the square. I'd like to see them bring that back, see if they could get more activity on the square.
And tell me a little bit, and I know this may change over the decades, but when you were born and growing up, what did your parents do? Did they have a job or roles in the community, or were they working in Marion or in other communities?
Dad worked for the North Electric in Galleon. He was a switchboard tester, and Mom was a housewife. But eventually, she became a teacher's aide at the Caledonia School, and then she was clerk of the Water Board, the Board of Public Affairs. Dad was involved with village government as a village councilman. And then he eventually went on and served on the Board of Public Affairs also. I think that other relatives in the past have been involved. I believe that a distant relative was the postmaster, and there were a couple of Underwoods, I'm not sure of the relationship, but a couple Underwoods, I believe, who were also mayor in the late 1800s or early 1900s. So hopefully we've been involved as well as we could have been, and hopefully the community's a little bit better because of our efforts.
I love that. Tell me a little bit about your childhood in Caledonia. What were you interested in? What did you do for fun from before school to your school days?
Oh, summers were great. We were out from sunrise to sunset, it seems like. The cliche where we had to be home when the streetlights came on was true. We rode our bikes around, went to the river. The little park in Caledonia was developed, so we spent time there. It was a pretty idyllic childhood. The problems of the world seem far away. It seems like the small town insulated us from some of the problems of the world at large.
And as a kid, like especially maybe into junior high, high school, well, let me ask first. You went to River Valley. River Valley had already been built away from Caledonia at that time, right?
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about your years at the River Valley complex and what you got interested in and what you thought you wanted to do with your life. Always a big question for someone ages, 11 to 18.
I went to Caledonia Elementary School until sixth grade, and then seventh grade went to Clarendon, which was the junior high school at that time. It was a combination elementary and junior high, and then went on to high school at River Valley. The new junior high was built in 1968, I believe it was, because I was in the eighth grade when we moved into the new building. I took just a college prep course, kind of specialized in languages. I studied Spanish for 4 years. I was the first one to accomplish that. Betty Huffman was a Spanish teacher, and she's still living. Her husband, Randy Huffman, was a science teacher, and he just passed recently. It was a normal high school experience. Would have been fun to go to high school in Caledonia like my dad did, but by that time, when I got there, they had consolidated the schools, and Clarendon and Caledonia, Martell, and Waldo joined together to form River Valley.
I love that. And you're actually the first one who has said this to me. I didn't realize that the high school, River Valley, was built before the middle school. And so for a while, folks from Caledonia Elementary were then being bused out to Clarendon to the intermediate school.
Yes. And then they bused us to the the high school to the Clarendon school, and that's where the 7th and 8th grade were. And then that all changed in 1968 when they built the new new junior high. I think it's a middle school now, but we were still a junior high. We had 7th, 8th, and 9th grade in one building, and then went on to high school in the 10th grade.
Wow. I love that, because there's just all these micro eras of the consolidation of the school. So I got to ask you now, and I know we're moving fast through your childhood, and I want to ask, is there anything else, any other kind of memories of shops or stores or organizations or festivals from your childhood before we exit. We can come back to. It's not like a one-way street, but just curious if there's more memories you wanted to share from your early days.
I remember Memorial Day parades that started on the square. At that time, it was easier to get to the Caledonia Cemetery because Cemetery Road, which is, I think it's now called Caledonia Climax Road, there was a bridge that crossed the Olentangy River, and so a parade would start on the square with the high school band, Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Brownies, veterans, Legion, all sorts of organizations, and we'd march out to the cemetery and have the memorial service out there. I think what they do now is they have a brief service on the square at the Veterans Memorial. They have a 21-gun salute, and then they retire to the cemetery for their memorial service then.
I think so. I was just actually talking to Don Broadwater today. He's going to be our last interviewee. I'm interviewing him tomorrow. And I asked him, I said, how long's it been? Or do you guys still do the parade? And he said, no, they do the stuff on the square, and then they have a program at the cemetery. And I assumed there was still a parade because it's come up in so many of these interviews from past decades.
Yeah.
But maybe that's been a while.
Yeah.
So I guess my big question then is, you're very modest, and I don't think you've said this yourself, but I've seen it in the paper and several other people have mentioned it. What happened next to lead you to become, I think, if not definitely the youngest mayor in Caledonia's history, possibly the youngest mayor in the history of Ohio right out of high school?
I remember in the summer of, 93, after I graduated high school, we were sitting at the dinner table talking about things, and my dad said, you know, you're old enough to run for public office now. And he said, you ought to run for the town council. There's a couple seats available. So I took a stab at it and went to the Board of Elections in Marion, got a petition, got my signatures, and ran. I think there were six of us who ran for four seats, and I finished fourth, but actually not too many votes from the top go-getter. So I was pleased to be able to take part in village government at a young age. I was young, but I made up for my youth and inexperience by bringing some enthusiasm to the job that young people could bring.
And what I guess I think what's remarkable to me, and this was a slightly different era, but what inspired you, regardless of your age, to want to be involved in public life and governance in Caledonia? I know it came in the family, but was that it, or was there something driving you to be involved like that?
I was involved with my church, and I was always interested in helping out in ways that I could, and I guess I saw this as a way that I could help and give back to the community a little bit. I think my parents being involved with town government helped too. I saw that they were always attending meetings and taking calls, and I used to go to meetings with them. I can remember going to council meetings with my dad when he was on the town council. I was probably 10 years old, and I thought maybe someday I'd do the same thing myself.
And so you joined council at 18, and then when did you become mayor?
I served 6 years on the council. I served one full term and then half of a second term. And then halfway through my second term on council, the mayor's seat came open, and I decided to run for that. I don't know whether it was because no one wanted the hassle or what, but I was the only one that ran. I served one full term and then ran again for a second term and ended up serving 8 years as mayor and left office in 1987.
And when did you first take office?
Took office in 1980, so I had 8 years, two terms.
And you were 20-something at that point?
24, I think, when I was mayor.
Wow. So tell me a little bit, in that period of involvement, you said you graduated high school, was it 73?
73, yes.
So what was happening in Caledonia? What were the issues in the community and downtown in that era when you started getting involved in public office, 73 about?
Oh, things hadn't changed too much from the 50s or 60s back then. Things were still pretty stable like they had been for decades. Big changes, I think, that happened with the village was the first consolidated fire district was formed. Before that, it had been a village volunteer fire department, and the village contracted with surrounding townships for fire protection. But then in the early 70s, I think, is when the fire district was formed, and the four townships of Clarendon and Tully, Scott in Marion County, and then Canaan in Morrow County joined together with the village to form First Consolidated. I think that was one of the big issues in the early 70s, and then further on in the late 70s, we started getting interested in a sewer system for the village. We enacted a I guess imposed is not the word I want, enacted a village zoning code as part of the requirements for the sewer system. And we had good progress until there was some public opposition. The people were a little concerned about the monthly sewer bills and assessments and tapping fees. So unfortunately, the project was dropped in the mid-80s. Eventually, the government came through and said that you have to install a sewer system, so it was done in the 1990s. But we could have done it in the 80s for a lot cheaper, unfortunately, the residents weren't in favor of it at that time.
And it sounds like that era, the era in which you served too, was kind of like the first time Caledonia as a village and as a municipality had really done a planning process. It sounded like you started doing zoning and kind of codifying what the village wanted in terms of its character into zoning and into planning for the first time. And it sounds like that was both exciting but maybe controversial in the community.
Yeah, I think it can still be a little controversial. Small towns and rural areas in particular value independence, and zoning and planning sometimes conflict with that. But I think people have accepted it, and they realize that zoning is for their protection, can make sure that property values are insured and that growth occurs in a reasonable manner. I think the village also had a subdivision regulation adopted in the 70s, and that's in case new subdivisions want to be built around the village.
Can you say more, like, what did the regulations say? Was it prohibiting subdivisions, or?
No, just in case a subdivision wanted to be built, I think the regulations would stipulate, like the width of the sidewalk, and that curbs had to be installed, and sidewalks, and streets had to be a certain specification. They've never been put into use because all the growth has been in Marion, and unfortunately no subdivisions have come around here. I think there was one that was planned for south of 309, but I think that fell through a couple years ago.
And in terms of how planning related to downtown and the public square, I know you told us a little bit about what the public square was like, and it was bustling in the 50s, and when you were born, kind of right after the bypass had come through. By the time you assumed office in the early to mid 70s, what was the situation on the public square? Maybe you could walk us through what you remember was in some of the buildings, and were things still going great? Were there signs of sort of stress as I guess industry hadn't really collapsed in Marion County yet, and farming wasn't quite consolidated yet, so maybe it was still the glory days in the mid-70s?
Yeah, I think those were the last glory days. The 70s were the best of times. I think that after the 70s, though, even though businesses started moving out and things started to decline, I was happy to see that there was maintenance being done on the village buildings. We spent quite a bit of money on the town hall, both inside and out, to restore it or renovate it the best we could. So it's in good shape. And the Union Block, which is right next to the town hall on East Marion Street, has been redone outside. Very pleased to see that Masonic Block is going to be repaired and restored with block grant funds.
I'm glad you saw that. We worked really hard, and I thought you would be proud.
There's a
long way to go with all of that, and it's as you mentioned, it's been controversial, as you can imagine, with this sort of stuff. Being the demographic we are in Caledonia, not everyone is thrilled about use of public monies for, even though it's coming to Caledonia. I think it's things like that are always difficult in a community where there is a strong value on independence and not taking funds from the government.
Yeah.
I think I've been at pains to explain that, well, they were going to allocate it to three projects anyway. It's already earmarked from our tax dollars in the past, so it might as well have been for Caledonia, not for somewhere else.
Yeah, that's the way we felt when we used block grant money for the streetscape project in the 80s. There was a little resistance from a few of the merchants, but I hope that after the job was done, that they saw that it was a good job for the village, and it helped help the downtown.
Is that the project that put in all the locust trees and the flower boxes and all of that?
Yeah, we put in new sidewalks and curbs. There hadn't been any curbs before to speak of, and then planted locust trees and put it brick paving between sidewalk and the curb. Some of the trees have come down since then, but there are a few still left, and I hope it adds to the ambiance of the downtown.
I know my family's building is the Temple Masonic Block. We've got our share of the locust trees, and I think it's lovely that we have them on that side of the square. And it adds so much character. I know probably it adds some maintenance too, but it's nice to have them.
I've been fortunate that I can travel, and every place that I've visited that has good memories has always had pleasant areas to sit under shade trees and pleasant streets. And hopefully we've replicated that a little bit in Caledonia.
Absolutely. Well, I want to do a deep dive into some of your projects during your term as mayor, including the restoration of Village Hall. I know there's a huge story there, but I just want to back up a little bit to some things that I know happened in the community that were pretty significant after you joined Village Council after 73, which is the Caledonia Centennial in 74 and then the Bicentennial of the U.S. in 76, which I know around the country and in Marion County were big catalysts for local history and for thinking about historic preservation and how our past can sort of lead to brighter futures. So can you tell me a little bit, and I know you were involved in them because you've said so and I've seen your name in the archive and all the program books, but tell me a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, about the Caledonia Centennial in 74, if I've got that right, and what were the ideas behind that and what happened?
1974 was actually the centennial of the village's incorporation in 1874. The village was founded in 1834, and it took 40 years for it to become big enough to be declared an incorporated village. I was on the town council in early 1974, just took office, and I suggested to the council and to the mayor, Herb Reed at that time, that we have a celebration, a small celebration. And I volunteered to be the chairman of that committee. It ended up being a much larger celebration than I thought we were going to have, but it was pleasing. We had a 3-day celebration on the square, brought people together, and for a few years afterwards, the celebration continued.
And tell me a little bit about some of the committees you were involved in, because I think most of what I've seen of the centennial were kind of the history documents you and Janet Reynolds and other people who were involved produced. I know Randy Winland shared some with me when I was nominating two of the downtown buildings. So you guys did a lot of, it wasn't just a celebration. I think you guys did a lot of research, right?
Yeah, we put together a little booklet. I think we can find a copy for you. And Janet Reynolds and others put together a history corner in what's now the village offices on the corner of the town hall. I think that a lot of those materials are still around, and hopefully we'll be able to put them into a little village museum that the town is planning at this time.
Well, and I've been hanging out in Village Hall and scanning some of those, and they've been added to over the years. So there's boxes and boxes of photographs and artifacts, and I'm hoping, I won't be able to tap all of it, but I'm hoping to be able to have some of that digitized and available on the website along with this project. And in the future, it'd be great to continue funding the project and expand it.
Uh-huh.
There's so much there. And yeah, I know down the line, April and others would really love to have a museum if we can get the upstairs of Village Hall, you know, back in action. But it sounds like you guys started a lot of that. So before the centennial, there wasn't a lot of public history happening around Caledonia's heritage.
I don't remember. I know the churches had done a lot of research on their history, and the organizations had researched their history, but I don't remember a lot of research going on about the village itself. Hopefully we started a little interest in the history of the town. The centennial was in 1974, and then in 1975 there was the second celebration. I think they called it the Caledonia 101 celebration for the 101 anniversary. And then in 1976, we had the Bicentennial celebration, the Bicentennial of the Declaration of Independence. Federal government, or the government, set up a program called Bicentennial Communities. Be recognized as a bicentennial community, a town had to have three facets of their celebration. They had to have a way of remembering the past, looking backward, and then celebrating the present, and then looking forward to the future. And so we had the history corner open, and people were able to look at the history of the village, and then the celebration took care of the present. And then for the future, looking forward to the future, we used proceeds from the centennial celebration in 1974, developed a little mini park on the northwest corner of the square where the Veterans Memorial is now.
Amazing. Can you tell me a little bit about the bicentennial events themselves, and then I want to hear more about each of those components. But what was the planning like for the bicentennial, and then what happened? Was it just a big festival and party, or was it a set of programs and lectures, or
mostly a big celebration like the centennial had been? I think there was an opening ceremony, and we may have had a speaker, it was. It's the same as the centennial, a way to get people together and enjoy the square.
And then tell me a little bit about the kind of, I call it like the Veterans Memorial, but the part of the square where there is kind of a memorial complex now. What was that like before the bicentennial, and what were you able to build up with those proceeds?
There was an old wooden building there, a frame building that was historic because I believe it was an old print shop. I'm not sure if it's the print shop where Warren Harding apprenticed, but I was told that it was the old print shop, the old village newspaper office.
For the Argus.
For the Argus. Was that it? Was that the name of it?
Yep, Caledonia Argus.
Okay. We had thought about saving the building, but after inspection, it was just not feasible to save it, renovate it. So we had it demolished and developed the little Veterans Memorial Park on the northwest corner.
So before that, there hadn't been any public recognition of veterans on the public square at all?
Oh, actually, there was. There was a memorial by the Underwood block. I think it was made out of wood and metal, and I remember all the names on that. And then they eventually had to take that down because of the because of decay, and then they built the new Veterans Memorial where it stands now.
Amazing. What other developments in kind of downtown public life and festivals did you see during your term in public office, either on council or as mayor? Were there other festivals or celebrations or events that were important?
I remember that a local girl, Jenny King, was selected as Miss Heart of Ohio, and they had a parade around the village with the fire trucks and the police cruiser, and brought her to the town square and recognized her and showed her a lot of pride the village had in someone going on and becoming Miss Heart of Ohio. The parades on the square from the Memorial Day had died out by then because the bridge, I think, had been taken out and we couldn't march to the cemetery anymore. But I do remember Jenny King's celebration. Another thing that was fun in the 1980s was we had the Ventures all-girl drum and bugle corps from Canada, Kitchener, Canada. They would come and stay in the village during the U.S. Open drum and bugle corps competition in Marion, and that was a big deal for a few years. They would give a presentation on the square for village residents for all the help that we had given them, and they would perform their routine, and we would give gifts in exchange, and that was a big good use of the public square.
How, I've heard about this from a couple of people now, and I think you might have shared this at our planning sessions, but how on earth did this relationship develop with this particular bugle corps from Canada?
I think what they did, the U.S. Drum and Bugle Corps Committee would find local churches and schools for the corps to stay. And for a while, for a few years, they stayed in the Methodist Church. I think they stayed there. And then after that, maybe because of better room or more facilities, they moved to the Caledonia School, which was still existing then, and then took their meals at the Methodist Church. Just by chance, I guess, this corps from Canada, was assigned to Caledonia, and ended up building a lot of relationships between the people of the Corps and the village. I know that some of the town residents that met the Corps and their leaders traveled to Canada to meet them in their hometown up there, and so that strengthened relationships between the village and the Corps.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's sad that they don't have the Norman Bugle Corps competition anymore. I think that ended 10 years ago or more. I don't know what happened to the Drupa Bugle Corps in Canada. I haven't heard from anyone. I don't know if they're still together, whether they still compete.
It would be amazing to find a way to connect with them through this project, maybe, and say, hey, you guys were in a lot of people's memories, and everyone's thinking about you down here. Do you remember us?
Yeah, that'd be great. I'll have to do some research on the internet and see if they're still in existence, and maybe we can find somebody to get a hold of.
You said it was Kitchener, Canada?
Yeah, Kitchener, Canada. It was called the Ventures, V-E-N-T-U-R-E-S. Ventures All-Girl Drum and Bugle Corps from Kitchener, Waterloo, Canada, Ontario, Canada.
Wow. So is there anything else that was happening in the 70s? I know you became mayor right in 1980, so that makes a convenient sort of transition moment in our interview. But anything else in the 70s that you feel like was really significant to the life of the downtown that you want people to know about?
No, I think things were... I'm kind of at a loss of words for a second, Jess.
Well, let me do this, actually. I've asked people to do this, and not everyone's into it, but if you are willing and you're interested in it, could you take us on a walk before we talk about your term as mayor, kind of building by building on the public square? I mean, I know it changed from year to year, but, you know, pick a point or kind of generalize in the 70s. I'd love to kind of just get your sense of what stores and what fraternal organizations and what was on the square at that point, mid-70s, around the centennial, bicentennial?
Union Block was where the hardware, library, and the L&M restaurant were. I believe there was a bar at one time in the Union Block, Dick's Bar, I believe it was. Above the bar, or above the stores at the bar, was the Odd Fellows, I believe it was, and maybe Knights of Pythias. Then across the street was Reese's Market. Can't think of the name of the building that it's located in, but then there was Masonic Block, which was next door and adjacent to that. Masonic Block had a drugstore at one time. McClinics, I think, were the ones who ran the drugstore. And before that, Shockley's were in that area. Then across the street on the other side of the square, on the west side, southwest corner, was Underwood Block with Sickles Market. Believe it or not, we had two grocery stores in Caledonia at one time in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And then on the northwest corner of the square, what they call the Class of 55 building, or the Clark building, was a TV store run by the Clark family. And then eventually Carol Ald had her dance studio in that in the 80s, and had that occupied for quite a long time. Further east, outside the square, but still in the proposed historic district, were three other brick buildings. One was the Hanley or Hamby House. Can't remember the name exactly, which was, I believe, a former hotel that housed people from the railroad that used to come through, and then two other buildings that had been converted into apartment buildings, I think, since then.
That's hugely helpful, and thank you for keeping the historic district in mind, too. Although we'll see. I'll listen to this in the future, and we'll be able to say which way it went, but they're voting on whether we can go ahead with the district proposal and the grant to fund it on Wednesday. And I have been let know that it's quite controversial and that it may be voted down, unfortunately. I know we've all put in a ton of work to that, but I think council may just, although they did seem to vote yes in April and May, I have been hearing that they may vote no on Wednesday. So I'll be there to answer any questions. And I am really hoping people see the value in it, but...
Yeah, I'm hoping so too, because from what I understand, the historic district status confers some tax benefits, and Some of the buildings in the village and the proposed district are pretty much in need of repair, and hopefully they could use the tax benefits to at least stabilize the buildings and then maybe sometime in the future restore and renovate.
Well, and that's exactly what, what I've been proposing. And it's been shown time and time again that, you know, historic preservation does help activate our downtowns and can be a catalyst for private investment. But as you know from being in public office, it can be difficult in a small community to propose things that may seem like restrictions, even if they really are offering more equitable access to incentives that bigger cities have tons of access to all the time, you know?
Yeah, I think probably something that's in some people's minds is that I know in some districts, maybe in bigger cities or in maybe in different small towns, sometimes they come with regulations as far as design and paint colors and things like that. I don't think that's been proposed in Caledonia, but that might be some resistance that people think there's going to be more control over them than what they want.
Absolutely, and that's not a requirement of the district, although I know the State Historic Preservation Office has been talking with April, and often it is ideal when you get a district that then you set up a design review board, but to be clear, that's not a requirement of listing the district,
yeah.
And the village is not obligated to do that. That's like one of those things that, like with planning, that's like best practice for preservation planning, but that's, you could also get a certified local government and, you know, have access to grants, but it's not obligatory. But speaking of all this, you know, the politics and drama and intrigue of public office, you said you were sworn in as mayor in 1980 at 24?
Yes. I was, like I said, I was, young and inexperienced, but, I tried to make up for it, with enthusiasm. I think sometimes I made up for the inexperience with as much enthusiasm as I could.
And I just want to clarify, because I've chatted with April a little bit about this. Has the mayor position in Caledonia ever been a full-time salaried role, or is it sort of like a stipend and you do it as much as you can, but everyone's working other jobs?
Yeah, it's a part-time job. When I first became mayor in 1980, the salary was $500 a year.
Oh, my goodness.
And they raised it to $1,000 a year for the second term. And people complained about that, doubling the salary. But I put in a lot of time. I was fortunate to be a teacher, and so I had summers free. I didn't teach summer school. And so I tried to be a full-time mayor in the summertime.
And where did I didn't get this part of your story. I was like, you got out of high school and you joined village council, but I forgot to ask about your career path. So tell me a little bit about becoming a teacher. Where did you train and where did you end up teaching and what subjects?
After I graduated high school, I enrolled at Ohio State. I had wanted to go to Bain campus, but because of finances, I was forced to attend the local campus, OSUM. Majored in elementary education and graduated in 1977. And again, I was fortunate to get a job right away in Marion City Schools. I interviewed and got a job at Taft Middle School and taught science for 20 years at Taft Middle School until 1997. Then I went to Edison Middle School on the west side of Marion and taught computers there for 7 years. And then finally ended my career at Grant Middle School, new middle school that was open when the three other middle schools were consolidated, and spent last 8 years teaching computers at Grant.
I did not realize at all that you had a whole career in the school system. That's amazing.
Yeah, I was lucky to get a job right out of college and spent 35 good years.
So you must know, do you know Miss Tara Dyer?
Of course. Yeah, Tara and I taught together at Taft her first year of teaching. I remember on Fridays we would combine our classes and show a movie as a reward if they had done their work properly during the week. So I've got a lot of good memories of Tara. Tara's been appointed to the city school board. I'm sure she's going to do a wonderful job there.
And I think one of the only school board members who has a career-long teaching experience, which I feel like is a must. I'm surprised that that's not a baseline requirement. But she, Ms. Dyer and I work closely together. I run a nonprofit called Marion Voices, and we do folk arts across Marion County. And so she's been there from the beginning and is one of our board members and a close collaborator. So we talk almost every day. And I was just texting with her. We're running a festival on the west side called Marion Black Joy Summerfest, June 25th. So I feel like our lives have many parallels kind of in the trenches of planning community festivals, but I've interviewed Ms. Dyer for other projects several times, and I, you know she's been at Marion City Schools for her career. So I just was excited to hear you say that. And I said, wow, I didn't know you were at Marion City Schools.
Yeah. Her roots go way back in Marion. Her family's been there for decades, and I'm glad to see her on the school board. She's run, I know, for a county commissioner and for city council, and hopefully she'll be able to move on to even bigger and better things in Marion in the future.
Absolutely. I know she's worked really, really hard, and it's not just about her, but about representation for so many Black women who have not been able to have positions of public office to kind of speak for whole communities that have been, you know, not had a seat at that table. So I think that's really critical. But yeah, just excited
exactly.
to hear you say that. I just spent 90, it's not my interview, but just spent 90 days at Garfield Elementary. Marion Voices has a school residency program that we developed where we bring folk artists from Marion County into the schools. So I was just running that program from January to May. We just wrapped up with a big festival on the 17th, and we're going to be at River Valley Middle School, Pleasant High School, and St. Mary's next year. So I'm glad we're related. I feel like we have these weird parallel lives in in what we do. But tell me about your term as mayor. I know you said you didn't do it for the pay. It was very part-time. You were teaching full-time. But what happened in your 8 years as mayor? What were there big dramas? Were there big problems? And what were you the most proud of in those 8 years?
Caledonia was a little bit different back in the 80s. We still had four bars, and I unfortunately remember that there were times when that caused problems for the village. The bars sometimes had fights on Saturday nights, and at that time Caledonia had a full-time marshal and street superintendent. And so we were able to handle problems here instead of calling the sheriff in. I guess those were some troublesome times with people who didn't want to follow the law. And unfortunately, the village had to step in and break up a few fights and take a few people in. But that's since kind of resolved itself because the bars have all closed. The Bowstring Bar and Grill is open. It's a more family-oriented restaurant bar, and hopefully we won't have those problems in the future.
Well, and I wanted to pause on that just because this is something I interviewed Jack Weidemeyer and his wife a week or so ago, and, you know, I think I didn't really understand until those interviews, like, Caledonia had bars, and it was kind of an oasis in the middle of a very dry community, so I didn't quite realize the bars were pulling in not just village residents, but people from Iberia, New Winchester, Martell, Clarendon, all over the place. Is that kind of correct, that it was like a lodestone to pull people in to drink, basically?
As far as I can tell, I didn't attend the bars, but I'm sure that most of the people that went to the bars were there just to socialize and have a good time with friends, but there were a few that would have a little bit too much, and that's when the marshal had to step in.
So besides the bar fights and the sort of, drama around that, what were the other major issues during your term? You said it from 80 to 88 you served?
80 to 87.
80 to 87.
Yeah, probably the big issue was the sewer system. We worked long and hard on doing the preliminary steps to get the sewer system in, but that all collapsed when there was opposition from the public. So I think that was probably the main thing
at that time. Again, I think infrastructure, even for me, infrastructure is one of those things that I think for the average person, it's like hard to comprehend because it's like you just have it or you don't, or you take advantage of it and you don't notice it till it's gone. So what were people relying on before? Just kind of their own sump pump systems or private sewage storage systems? There was no consolidated system?
The village had a water system, public water system, that was built in the late 40s, but no public sewer system. Each homeowner had a septic system that discharged right onto their own lot. The problem with that is that the clay in soil in Caledonia is not suitable for a septic system. In most cases, the soil is very clayey, and after the effluent, or what they call it, would come out of the septic tank, it would go into a leach bed. And unfortunately, those wouldn't work, and they would back up. And I can remember very bad smells in town in the 70s and 80s when leach beds that had been installed earlier had failed, and sewage would come to the top of the ground.
So this was not just a kind of like pie in the sky planner's dream of a sewage system. This was a response to a real problem, like Caledonia smells bad.
Yeah. One thing I want to make sure that people know is that back in the 80s when we were planning the sewer system, the federal government would have paid 75% of it. I'm not sure how much they paid at the 90s when the sewer system was put in, but I want people to know that we could have had a good deal in the 80s if we had gone through with the planning as it was done at that time. But unfortunately, people weren't interested then, and they were forced in the 90s to tap in. It worked out all right. The assessments, I think, have been all paid off, but we could have done it cheaper earlier if we had been a little bit more foresightful.
That's so interesting to hear. And like I said, on a personal note, you know, it's been like with this historic district, it's been so hot, cold that I just sit in my car and cry sometimes. And it makes me feel a little bit better knowing that I'm not the only one who's struggled trying to, you know, propose and implement things that really would be for the good of the community. But it's sometimes, you know, we can be a stubborn place.
Yeah. Small town people are set in their ways. I think people in big cities are also, but the thing with small towns is you know everyone, and people aren't afraid to voice their opinion. So it worked out all right in the end.
Now tell me, I know you said another big project was the restoration of Village Hall, and you're going to have to tell me the specific acronyms, but I know you told me three times before, but there was a specific grant program that provided some labor, I think maybe through the prisons, and you were able to get a grant and utilize that to kickstart some of the restoration, but then you weren't able to go so far as to get it listed to the National Register. Can you tell me the story of all of that?
Well, the restoration and renovation actually started with Roger Agnes. He was the town marshal and street superintendent, and he spent many, many hours restoring or renovating the upstairs. He put in a suspended ceiling and paneling and a new heating system, and also repaired the council room in the town hall. The funding that we used for some other repairs was called the CETA program, Comprehensive Employment Training Act, I believe it was. It was a federal program in the 80s to employ people that were underemployed, and we used labor from that to repair the entryway to the town hall. The stairway and the wainscoting was all stripped of old green paint and stained a more natural wood color, and that was all sealed, and we had new flooring put in. And then we used federal grant money to put in restrooms upstairs and a chairlift. I suppose codes now would require an elevator, but at that time we were able to use a chairlift to get elderly and infirm up to the town hall.
What motivated the desire to renovate and restore town hall? Was it kind of like the sewage project that, like, things were falling apart and were not functional, so something had to be done, or...
No, we looked at the town hall as being a center of the village, a gathering place like the square. After we had put in restrooms and fixed up the upstairs, Mike Lyon, who eventually became mayor, and his wife Binky, they started what they called Fantastic Friday, Friday Night Fantastic, I think is what they called it. And they brought all the young people in for dancing and music every Friday night during the school year, I believe it was. I might have done it during the summer, too. But that was a good use and a big use of the town hall.
And tell me a little bit, I know we talked about this briefly in the planning meeting, but you had planned to, or council at the time was interested in even more with historic preservation, right? Because I know there was, I think Janet Reynolds at least did a survey of our downtown buildings, and there was talk of getting a historic district in the 80s. I just say this because, like, when I was kind of digging up and doing this research, the State Historic Preservation Office sent me some files, and they're like, actually, you're not the first one to think about this. They were trying to do something like this in the 80s, and I was just curious if you remember the conversations around recognizing our historic buildings and what the interest was around that in your term as mayor.
We had a local resident, Janet Reynolds, who was really interested in the history of the village, and she was helping us with planning for a historic district and some of the repairs and renovations that we did. I don't know what happened with the historic district after that. After I left office, I'm not sure if the council followed through on that or not, but we had good plans at one time, and Janet was one of the leaders behind that.
So tell me a little bit more about what else happened in your years as mayor. What were some of the other victories? I know there were some heartbreaking things like putting years of labor into the sewage project and having it not come to fruition. But what did you feel like was a victory?
Oh, I was really proud of the little park that we made. That was our own little version of urban renewal. We took some blight and dilapidation and removed it and put in something that was a little more beautiful and something people could use.
This is the park on the west side of the square?
Yeah.
And this is kind of again, it's decade by decade. Maybe you didn't see so much change, but I'll ask. Was the public square changing in the 80s? I mean, you graduated in 73, kind of during this heyday of the centennial and the bicentennial, and folks were downtown and things were still kind of hot, and then towards the end of the 80s, what were things looking like? Did we still have everything we had before, or were you seeing more vacancies on the square?
Yeah, I think that's when the decline started. I'd have to look back at the economics, but I know decline began in the 80s and 90s where the hardware closed and the grocery stores eventually closed and the bars even closed and I think that would probably be the beginning of the end for at least what Caledonia used to be like. Hopefully in the future we'll build it back up again, but I think the decline started at that time.
Were people talking about it like a decline at that moment in the 80s and 90s, or was it just kind of like so gradual that nobody noticed until there were barely any stores left?
Oh, I think there was a fatalism. With cheap gas and big box stores in Marion, that dealt the death knell to small town businesses.
I see. Now, in that era, though, I'm pretty sure, because I spent a whole day a couple weeks ago just sifting through that history corner and all of the files of the Farmers Festival. So the Farmers Festival, strangely, there was this big revitalization of community spirit at the time, right? Was that late 70s or was that all throughout the 80s that the Farmers Festival happened? And I think I saw your name on one of the planning committees, so I'm pretty sure you were involved.
Yeah, I helped with the publicity for the for the Farmers Festival. I think the festival started in, would have been the late 70s, and then it continued on until, I believe, the late 80s. I know there's talk now of reestablishing the Farmers Festival, which is really great to hear because it would be great to get people together again. I've been hearing about is that there's a nonprofit been formed in Caledonia. I think they call it Friends of Caledonia.
Yep.
And they've been bringing food trucks into the village every Monday night when the pizza parlors aren't open. And I think that's a good step in the right direction to get people together and get them back on the square and hopefully see what's possible on the square. And maybe that will lead to some improvement there.
Well, and they're the same group that's talking about getting the Farmers Festival back together, and they did the Easter celebration this year, and I think they're really interested in getting movies on the square. I know because I started writing a grant for them, and they ultimately didn't want to go through with it because we didn't have enough staffing and hands on deck for this summer, but I think that organization with friends and volunteers will be able to bring some of that back, which is great. Can you, since you were the mayor during the heyday of the Farmers Festival, and I've seen the pictures, there's just stacks and stacks, hundreds of thousands of them at Village Hall, and there are, you know, scramblers and Ferris wheels and beer gardens and petting zoos on the square. It looks like a different world. It's magical. So you were the mayor when all this was happening. So can you talk a little bit about the kind of spirit of the Farmers Festival, what it was like and what it meant to the community? Because I think it was a really big thing.
Yeah, there were a lot of people involved, not only people from Caledonia, but from surrounding rural area. It brought people together. It was only a 3-day festival, but the planning went into it was 12 months a year. And it was a good way to get the people together and show them what Caledonia is capable of.
Can you say more about some of the special activities or areas or kind of competitions that were a part of the Farmers Festival, if you remember?
Oh, I'd have to go back and look, but I know, would he be your grandpa, Jack Reese?
Jack's my grandpa, yep.
Yep, I know Jack would sponsor or would line up things like wood sawing contest and wood chopping contest. They even had grease pig catching contest. They had rides and concessions and entertainment, square dancing on the square. I believe they'd have a band for the kids. And so it was just a real magical time for the village.
And why, I don't know if you were involved all those years, but why do you think that kind of died down? I mean, besides the fact that you and I both having been on the backside of festival planning, it's exhausting. I just did a festival in May and I've got another one in June. And I'm like, after two festivals in a row, May and June, I'm going to take a vacation till September and disappear because festivals are a lot of work. But do you think that was what wore people out, just too much planning or?
Yeah, I think people just got tired. It was the same people from year to year that were involved and, those people eventually got to the point where they weren't able to do it anymore. It's good to see a younger generation coming along now, and hopefully as new people move in and a sense of community is developed, then maybe more and more activities like this will be planned.
Awesome. And for you, your last term as mayor, you said, ended in 87?
Yes.
Was that the end of serving in public office in Caledonia for you, or what happened next?
Yeah, I decided not to run for a third term, and it was kind of unusual. Nobody else ran for anything else that year, and the village received some recognition for that, although I think it was kind of negative recognition. Somehow, a reporter from the Columbus Dispatch heard from the Board of Elections or from somewhere that no one was running for anything in Caledonia.
So you mean like no one was running for mayor, no one was running for office, those seats were just going to be empty?
Yeah, all the seats would be empty and they'd have to be appointed by the existing council. But what the reporter from the dispatch did was put it out on the AP, so it became a national story. And we got calls from all over the country, people calling in wanting to interview us on talk radio, just kind of like a human interest story. I remember getting a call at school from talk radio in Cleveland, I think it was, and they had us on in the morning just to talk about why nobody was running for anything.
That's interesting, because it does seem like that's kind of the same era that the downtown was closing up, the same era that the Farmers Festival stopped, and it seems like also there was this, you know, dearth of people to be available for public office.
Yeah, I'd have to be a sociologist to study it more, but I think maybe things were changing in society then. I think maybe people were becoming a little more, I don't know, introverted, introspective, and unfortunately, the Farmers Festival died out, and it's good to see them planning to bring it back.
Now, did the story on the AP wire generate any new applicants to run for office, or did they end up just appointing everyone, like you said?
I think they appointed people. I think Mike Lyon volunteered to move up from council to mayor, and they appointed people for the council. I think even today, though, they still have a hard time finding enough people to run. I think maybe only one or two people will run, and they have to appoint the remainder. So, I don't know why that is. I think people maybe want to be asked rather than volunteering.
Wow. So So what changed in your life once you stepped down after living, you know, a very public life in these high-stress public positions for, almost two decades?
Yeah, I decided that I wouldn't run again, and I bought a house just outside of Caledonia, a historic house, the Anselman House. It originally went with quite a few acres that became Anselman Memorial Park. I believe that was donated to the village for, actually donated to the River Valley Lions Club for a park, and then the village eventually took it over.
So you live in the big, beautiful house that abuts the park.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if it's very beautiful, but I'm working on it.
Wow. So what did you see happen in Caledonia after that? And I know it's, like, again, tough to summarize decade by decade, but, you know, what did you see into the 90s and 2000s? Just kind of a slow shuttering of things, or were there other big issues?
No, I don't think, the big issue was the sewers came through in the 90s, and that was controversial, but again, I think people see the wisdom of having sewers and helping the environment. I kind of lost contact with the village for the years afterwards. I wasn't involved and wasn't involved in any planning or anything after that.
And what about today? What are your thoughts on where our public square in downtown is today? I know both it's even, you know, decades and decades after when things were already looking bleak in the 80s, but there also are some stirrings of life. You know, we've got the farmers market, things like that. So what's your kind of perspective on our public square in 2022?
Well, I'm excited that it's becoming the center of village life again. I'm glad you mentioned the farmers market. I had forgotten that. April Morrison, the mayor, has really taken the lead and built that up. And the food trucks and the possible return of the Farmers Festival will all bring people back to the square, and hopefully it'll let them maybe take a look around and see what needs to be done on the square. I'd love to see more businesses come in, and before that, I'd like to see some of the buildings repaired. A couple of them are kind of in poor shape, but if we get more people down, maybe there'll be somebody who will come in who might be interested in buying and fixing up and renovating some of the buildings that are there, and maybe we'll get some new business in.
Absolutely. What do you think in terms of, you know, I like that you had that, and I'm so sorry, there's like some sort of vehicle backing up and down outside my house, which is maybe you can't hear it on the phone, but it's very loud on my recording. But yeah, go ahead.
I forget the question. Would you go ahead?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, speaking of, you know, the bicentennial program from the government where they had you, you know, say how you were connecting to the past and celebrating the present and building towards the future. What do you think, in a best picture, most ideal world scenario, what would you like to see for our public square in 10 years?
It would be great if Caledonia could become a little PAL from, or downtown PAL from Delaware County. I'd like to see antique stores and restaurants and shops come in and make it a destination for people who want to get out of the city and come in and spend a little time in a small town. Whether or not that'll happen, I don't know. But one thing Caledonia has going for it is it has a very good infrastructure of good buildings. I noticed that when I was growing up, that the town square and the Caledonia had good, solid, substantial brick buildings rather than frame buildings. That the square was really cool because it was surrounded by these brick buildings all from the same era. So you had this cohesive architecture that really added to the experience for people who notice that sort of thing.
And it's monumental, you know? I mean, maybe that's just me, but I always, you know, we had someone from the State Historic Preservation Office, Barb Powers, drive up, and I asked her, I said, you know, it's kind of cool, right, driving into town for the first time, because I feel like you don't expect that off 309, this kind of massive, matching public square with these very large, very impressive brick buildings. And our village hall, I do think it's kind of there's a scale and a grandeur to our village square. And this is no shade to our other amazing six villages, but we're the only one in Marion County that has that sort of square, you know?
Yeah. The people who founded Caledonia back in 1834 had a lot of foresight. They laid out this wonderful town square, and luckily we've maintained it and build it up over the years, and they had foresight, and they knew that it was going to be the center of village life.
Well, is there anything else? I've got us up to the present and the future, but we probably skimmed over a lot. But is there anything that you haven't gotten to talk about for this interview in your life or your career in public service that's really important that you absolutely want to share?
Oh, I think I've mentioned everything.
Well,
like I said, I'm pretty modest. I don't want to talk about myself too much.
Well, it's just been amazing getting your perspective, and I love that this interview project has, you know, taken interviews with everyone from fraternal organization members to folks who have owned shops and businesses to, you know, your average Caledonian to, we did get an interview Binky Lyons about Fantastic Friday. So we have this lovely cross section. I'll read you my list here if I can find it. One of these note cards. So far, like I said, you're number 9, and we've interviewed George Kasotis, Carol Alt, Phyllis and Ted Noggle, who had the family florist, Jim Waddell, whose ancestor, you know, had a store in Reese's Market before it was Reese's Market, Melvin Palmer, Binky Lyon, John Keitlinger, Jack and Benita Weidemeyer, Tim Mooney, yourself, and then I'll be talking with Don Broadwater about the Legion. So I think it's just kind of cool at this point in the project, all the stories start to converge, and it's almost like a prism where I hear about the same festival or event or things like that from a lot of different perspectives, and I think that is the power of a project like this in a small community, that you get that diversity of perspectives on the same place. So I'm just very grateful you were interested, came to our planning sessions, and took the time to do an interview.
Well, thank you. It's been fun. I look forward to seeing the resulting product that you put together for us.
Absolutely. I'm going to make quick work of it in the next couple of weeks and get us a lovely website together and have some audio, and we'll see what our projection situation is, audio and or potentially video pieces to debut at the farmer's market, either played out loud, or I may have some sort of a booth at one of the farmer's markets where we can come and listen towards the end of June. But it's really exciting, and I'm just very excited for putting this out in the world and having people listen into the interviews and, you know, share memories, and we'll create some sort of forum for people to share thoughts on what they'd like to see. But the only other thing I'd say is if you're bored tomorrow on a Wednesday, we are discussing the historic district for the last time at the village council meeting tomorrow. I think it's at 7, but I know you're retired from public life, but you're welcome to come and listen. And if you have any thoughts on the district, I'm going to be there to just, you know, people have questions, but otherwise observing. But we are discussing that on the first, and I think your what you just said about the coherence of our brick buildings and how special that is. I think that kind of perspective is useful, because, you know, seeing it every day, I think sometimes we take for granted that it's like that, but with the buildings as old and in need of repair as they are, there is going to be interventions required, and incentives will help with keeping it like that. So feel free to show up if you're bored and feel like weighing in, but no pressure.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jess. This has been fun.
Thank you, Randy. Really appreciate your time. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. So once again, that was an interview with Randy Underwood. I'm Jess Lamar Reese-Holler. It is Tuesday, May 31st, 2022. This was an interview for the Caledonia Public Square Memories and Futures Project, funded through a community project grant from the Arts Resiliency Initiative at the Ohio Arts Council. It is, I already said what day it is. It's May 31st again. Thank you so much for listening.